Welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile, and today I'm being joined by C-Red Fred from ChicagoBullseye.com and a frequent caller into the Waddle and Sylvie show. Now, Fred always elicits different reactions from different Bulls fans. He tends to take a more optimistic approach, which is fine, but some people on Bulls Twitter and in Bulls fandom don't really seem to care for his opinions a lot. Others seem to like his optimistic view and his knowledge of the team. I certainly respect him and think that, you know, he has a lot of knowledge, and I think his optimism isn't as unguided as people think. But it was really enjoyable to talk to Fred for a little bit. We originally had started the podcast talking about the fact that we were both Bartlett residents, and I got to know more about the history of ChicagoBullseye.com and how he launched in 2007. But unfortunately, we had some audio issues with the beginning of the podcast. So I'm going to lead us right into one of the first questions that I had about why he has such an optimistic outlook of the Chicago Bulls. Take a listen.
This is our third losing season since 2004. The Bulls have been far more competitive and brought me more joy than virtually any team in Chicago over the course of my lifetime. And I don't view the last 10 years as a big disaster like most people do. I think we were robbed of a title by injuries. I can make a very good case for that. And I think anyone who thinks logically will understand that the Bulls had two first-team All-NBA, not All-Stars, All-NBA players in Derrick Rose and Jakeem Noah, who declined to the point that they were barely given a minimum contract. And that's never happened. You know, I can't point to a team that I can't point to a team where that's happened at the same time, relatively the same time. So, and they were able to still maintain a competitive groundwork due to, you know, getting Jimmy Butler, and they decided to rebuild. And, you know, here we are in year two of the rebuild, and everybody acts like this is, you know, 2001. It's not. I think there's brighter days ahead.
What if I told you could be the guy in charge making all the decisions?
I'd have to say so far, I don't think I could have done a better job than what they've done so far since the trade of Butler. And I kind of make this point over and over again. If you look at every major move since that day, when they traded Jimmy Butler, the Bulls were basically either the range of the reaction from the fan base was either mild irritation, ranging to, you know, severe outrage. So the day Butler was traded, I couldn't believe what I heard in the radio. You know, then they drafted Lauri Markkanen, and even I wasn't happy with that. I wanted Malik Monk. I didn't really know who Lauri was, to be honest. And then I said, but I'll give it a chance. And obviously he turned out to be much better than any one of us expected. Look at Zach LaVine, the signing and matching of the contract to Zach LaVine, bring Zach in. Almost every major decision that they've made in the last couple of years, even trading Bobby Portis for Otto Porter, has been met with outrage to anger. Wendell Carter Jr., I knew a lot of people that wanted to trade up to get Mo Bamba. What a disaster that would have been. And I thought that was an excellent pick. That was one guy I really wanted them to take, and they went with him. So it's hard for me to say, you know, I could do better than what they've done. I think they're doing the right thing right now. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who they draft. This is a very tough draft to pick if they don't end up in the top two.
Right.
And so we'll see where to go. I'm a huge fan of DeAndre Hunter. But as I said before, I mean, you know, I've been wrong on a lot of picks that the Bulls went with. I wasn't happy about getting Noah. I was one of those guys who wanted Spencer Hawes. They were right. I was wrong.
Fred, what's funny about that, 2007, I remember sitting in my living room watching that draft, and I actually cried when they drafted Joe Kuno because I was so pissed off.
I know. It's amazing. I was the same way. I just wasn't a fan of his. I didn't think he was a very good, skilled offensive player. You know, he brought a lot of defense, but I wasn't a fan. I just wasn't. And I thought Spencer Hawes had more offensive skills. And, you know, so I was disappointing in that. And then that draft, when they drafted Taj Gibson, there was a player who was falling, who was projected to go higher. Gosh, I can't remember his name right now. I should look it up while we're talking. But Taj Gibson, who the heck is Taj Gibson? What a pick that was. And even Jimmy Butler at 30. I mean, all these guys. And Denzel Valentine, I'm one of the guys. You know, for the most part, when you look at the top NBA All-Pro players, 13 out of the 15 last year were picked in the top 10. The Bulls' last four top 10 picks have been Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Derrick Rose, and Jakeem Noah. two of those four have already made All-NBA first team. And then I think Lauri's on his way. Maybe not first team, but definitely second or third within the next few years. I think Wendell Carter's going to be all first team defense. So can't do much better than that. Just that they've been kind of a victim of their own success in that they haven't drafted in the top 10, you know, for the most part over the last decade.
For the sake of the podcast here, since it is about, you know, the rebuilding efforts and kind of putting you in that role, I guess, I would say that it's fair to say that you like the core as is. Like, you know, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, that those guys are part of your core. What would be those some moves that you would consider making to the rest of the roster? You've brought up the name Denzel Valentine, but there's other fringe guys on that roster. Chris Dunn, Wayne Selden. What are some names, though, that you know you would consider cutting bait with or keeping around?
Well, I don't think there's anybody. You know, Selden's a nice player. You know, Ryan Archie, not in the NBA, I used to joke about him. He's clearly proved he belongs in the NBA. He's better than I expected. But if he's not on the team next year, I'm not losing 1 minute of sleep. Like, if I go up and down the roster, there's only like seven guys that I really say I want them back next year. And, you know, that's Denzel Valentine. And I know a lot of people are rolling their eyes already. Denzel Valentine shot 38% from three last year. He brings shooting, which this team sorely needs. He's an excellent ball handler. He's an excellent playmaker and facilitator. There's nothing that he does poorly on the offensive end. He's an excellent rebounder for his position. He led the team in rebounding last year for anyone who was on the power forward or center. So on the offensive end, he really doesn't have any faults. Now, defensively, he's far more limited, but he's got great length with over a 7-foot wingspan, and that covers up for a lot of problems. You know, if he overcomes his ankle injury, he's going to be a great rotation player. So I want to see Denzel back. Chris Dunn's another one a lot of people are debating, you know, should we bring him back or not? I don't think you should trade Chris Dunn now because he's at an all-time low in his value. And I think he's still better than what he's shown. And the point guard position in general, I've seen a lot of players progress. That's the one position where usually you'll find some guys that are late bloomers, like Kyle Lowry comes to mind. There's a lot of point guards that haven't necessarily hit it right off because it takes a little bit longer, I think, to learn that position. I saw some strides from him this year. I thought for the most part, and he quietly finished very strong over his last five games. But everybody's already given up on him. I don't want him to go. I want the Bulls to bring in like a Patrick Beverley as a free agent point guard to challenge Chris. Okay. And either he becomes the best backup point guard in the league, arguably, or he steps up to the challenge and grabs that starting spot and becomes a player that I think he can be. I think actually, contrary to what a lot of people say, I think he can fit in really well next to LaVine because Dunn can guard any two in the league well. I think you need a defensive first point guard if Zach LaVine's your shooting guard. So Valentine, Dunn, Markkanen, Otto Porter, Hutch, Wendell Carter Jr., LaVine. I think how many is that? LaVine, Carter Jr., Hutch, Otto Porter, Markkanen, Dunn, Valentine. Those are the guys that I say absolutely must be back next year. Outside of that, you know, Lopez, I'd like to see him bring him back, but I'm not going to lose sleep. Like I said, if he's gone, I think he's a valuable kind of backup. They got a number one draft pick coming in. So, I mean, I think the roster's kind of set. Who cares about 11 to 15? Shaq Harrison, bring him back. I like him. But, again, I'm not going to – oh, he's gone. You know, who cares, right? I mean, these guys aren't great players, and they shouldn't be in the rotation of any really good team.
With Lopez, do you think his improved play, you know, the later half of the season, do you think that actually might price him out of the market for the Bulls?
I doubt it because the center position now is completely devalued in the NBA, and I think there's a lot of far better centers. Cousins, look what Cousins got, Golden State. I mean, there's a lot of centers on this market that I think are better than Robin Lopez, and they're going to be up, you know, be in for a rude awakening that wings get paid in the NBA now, and I think centers are going to get paid less. I think a fair amount for Lopez would be between $6 and $8 million a year. Anything more than that, I'd really question whether or not we need it, you know, just because we do have to have a backup center. Well, let's take another step back. If Zion's our draft pick, there's no way I'd say you have to have Lopez back at 6 to 8. Like, you got to bring in a decent backup front court player, but I would prefer if Zion is the draft pick that you just have Zion, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. as the three front court players there's 96 minutes between the power forward and center position available. You divide that evenly between Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Zion at 32 minutes per game. That's how it should go down. You don't need Lopez in that situation. He's only going to make it more difficult, you know, for them to get regular minutes. So, or you bring, if he's willing to take a $1 or $2 million per year contract, yeah, bring him back. He's a great example of how you should prepare, and he seems like a good teammate. But don't overpay for a backup center.
I do want to get a little bit, you brought up the name Zion Williamson, I do want to get to the draft in just a little bit, but one other question I wanted to ask you, you know, if you were the man in charge, what are you doing about the coaching spot? Are you letting Jim Boylan come back for another year, or are you thinking about finding a different coach to lead your young core going forward?
Boy, that's a tough question, because February was so good, it kind of turned me around on Jim Boylan. I think he's a good guy, and I thought that month really kind of saved his job probably. And then, but since then, and I understand we've had major injuries and, you know, team hasn't been anywhere near healthy. It's been a kind of a disaster. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. If I had to be a betting man, I'd say they're probably leaning towards bringing him back, and I'm fine with starting the season with him as the head coach. There's some things I really like about him. You know, I do like how he works the officials. I couldn't stand that about Hoiberg. I thought, you know, that's a big part of what you do is working the officials. And to, when you got a young team like the Bulls are getting constantly screwed on the calls, you got to stand up and take a tee every once in a while. And Fred just refused to do that. I do like how Jim does that. But, I mean, some of the nonsense of wasting timeouts with 5 minutes left, that's just like an inexcusable mistake for me. Mm-hmm. And I saw far too much of that. I think Doug Collins got in his ear and he improved as the year went on. And I think I made a statement in February that, kind of sarcastically, that I know we're all great at our job in month one. And I do believe that. I think, you know, it was his new job and he failed pretty much in the first month, but the results showed they were much better in February. It's a really tough call because I think some now he's kind of hopefully bought, some of the team has bought into him. But if you can find a better coach, a good coach, I think you got to explore that. But that's the question. Who are the good coaches? I mean, I was a big fan of Jerry Stackhouse. He just took the job with Vanderbilt. Like, I'm not a big fan of Walton. Like, I don't think he's a massive step up where you should change everything and bring in Walton. Like,
what about a name like Monty Williams?
I like Monty Williams. I think, yeah, you'd probably in the long run be better off with Monty Williams.
I think there's some cachet with that name. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a name that could draw interest from, you know, if you do have free agents that might be interested in you, or, you know, if you have a younger team, I feel like that's a name that could bring some enthusiasm. I don't, maybe that's just pie in the sky thinking, but I think that's an interesting coach that I always think of.
I really don't know if the coach is that big of a deal when it comes to bringing in players. I mean, obviously, if it's Tom Thibodeau, it's going to be a massive negative, right? I know they had that recent poll that came out in The Athletic that Jim Boylan was also listed, I think, number two as a player as a coach that players don't want to play for. Right. I think that might have been a little bit kind of, you know, all the negative PR in December about the whole thing with the push-ups and the sprints and all that stuff. I think that probably I think that kind of like colored it a little bit worse than it actually was. I think as time goes on, people will say, the word will get out, he's actually not that bad. I just don't know how big of a draw a coach is necessarily. I don't really buy it. I think players are far more important. The relationships between players are far more important than who the head coach is. And I don't think Jim Boylan's necessarily going to be an impediment to bringing in great talent. What's going to be an impediment is our record. Mm-hmm. And I think Zach LaVine will do as good a job as any player in the NBA at recruiting players. He seems to be beloved by the league in general. So it's going to be interesting. It's a really tough call because, you know, if you fire Jim Boylan, you bring someone else, everybody's got to learn a new system. I do think, like, if we start out poorly next year, he'll be gone anyhow. Because there's no excuses. You cannot have another year like we've had the last 2 years. I mean, the team has far too much talent to suck that bad.
The next order of business, really, I guess, would be after you kind of get an idea of what you want to do with some of your roster, what you want your core to be. I don't think this is even a question I have to ask. If the Bulls end up winning the lottery, the pick is Zion Williamson. I don't think anybody would argue that. What would you do, though, at 2 or 3?
I love John Morant. I think what's really impressed me about him is his in the games I've watched of him, his vision is so underrated. So, you know, Trae Young, that's the thing with Trae Young. Like, he's a great shooter in college. The thing about Trae Young, he led the league in assists. I mean, he was a fantastic passer. And you have to have that skill if you're that small or that light. You need to have something else outside of great shooting. So Trae had that. I'm not saying Jaws is good of a passer as Trae Young, but he's not out of the ballpark. He's a very good passer. His vision really stood out to me. That's the most important thing you got to have at the point guard position. So I am all in on him as a second overall pick. He fits a need for our team. It'll be very, very interesting to see what happens if they do end up with number two. They take Ja Morant. You know, do they bring in another vet to be a starting point guard, or do they just run with Chris Dunn and Ja Morant as the 1-2? Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting. In that case, I kind of view Morant actually coming off the bench, at least initially to start the season. You know, give a starting nod to Dunn. Probably fits a little bit better with Morant, you know, some questionable defensive metrics, but he's such a good athlete. Like, I've always been a believer in defense is 90% want to. And if you have athletic ability and you combine that with want to, you're going to be fine in the long run.
Especially over time, it slowly develops as you get older and wiser too, if you have the want to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know some people worry about his shooting. He's an 80% free throw shooter. Always look at the free throw shooting. That's a big metric I look at in college where people are questioning, is he a good enough shooter? If he's shooting 80 or above in the college level, his shooting is going to be fine. Over the years, he'll be a much better shooter. Guys I'm more worried about are like 70 below, you know, like Mo Bamba I knew right away. I don't care how many shots he made in an empty gym. Shot like 67% from the free throw line in college. He's not a good shooter, you know, and you can get anybody, me or you, if you take a video long enough. You can get a video of us hitting maybe 10 in a row. I know I can do it, you know, pretty much daily. But if what they then show in the video, none of us saw were the 15 misses he had in a row. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ja Morant's going to have excellent shooting beauty. I think that the dislike on RJ Barrett is way overstated. I thought I saw some really nice glimpses of vision from Barrett during the season. Yeah, he didn't perform great down the stretch, and he's 18 years old, and he didn't pass it to Zion as much as he should have, tried to be the man. I still think he's going to be an excellent NBA player. I think people have kind of gone a little bit overboard on him in negative light.
Just to go backtrack here on Ja Morant, do you kind of worry, like, if you do have Jim Boylen in place, do you worry about a slow development with a point guard like Ja Morant? Because you kind of saw how the point guard position, especially with Chris Dunn, kind of tapered once Boylen took the reins. Is that something you would worry about with Ja Morant?
Not really. I think Boylen knows what he's doing. I think the general narrative that he's a wandering idiot is wrong. I think he knows basketball. I don't know if you read Darnell Mayberry's article with him. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's worked with a lot of smart coaches. He's got a little bit of a hard-ass edge to him, I think, which is some people find off-putting. I think he knows what he's doing. I'm not really worried about him stunting his growth. I don't think Giles is going to come in the league and set the world on fire at that position. It's just a tough position, and the learning curve is a little longer. There's going to be a lot of moments, no matter what. When you have that athletic ability, there's going to be nights where he gets in the open court and does something, and people are just like, wow. And I really hope he ends up on the Bulls if it's not Zion.
In that 4-7 range, if that's, you know, that seems like the likely spot the Bulls might end up in the draft. What are some players that you would think about targeting there?
Well, I know people are going to say, well, of course you're saying this now. I've been on DeAndre Hunter all year. There's guys in every draft that when I really start prepping for it, and I felt this way about Wendell Carter last year, is I'm watching the videotape and I'm like, what am I missing? Like, why are more people not talking about this guy? I saw it last year with Wendell Carter. He had elite defensive ability. He was an excellent passer, hit the three-pointer at a 40% rate. Like, what am I missing? And it was kind of bizarre. Like, people were like, well, he didn't really do, you know, just some of the stuff that people were, how quick is he going to be on pick and rolls? Or he's going to be able to guard point guards? How many fives in the league can guard a point guard? What kind of answer is that? Like, and Duke played zone. How can you tell? And right away in summer league, you could tell he had the quickness to defend the rim, even, you know, how many times have you seen swat a point guard on a drive? I mean, just excellent player that was just kind of, I felt, unfairly maligned. And I feel the same way about Hunter. Like, he's so big. It compared when you saw him playing Culver, it was like a, to me, it was like a eighth grader versus a fifth grader. Just looking at how much bigger and stronger Hunter was than Culver. I thought he manhandled him a lot on a one-on-one defense last night. And all year, just look at the shooting metrics. Like, Hunter is over 40% from three. Culver was 31%. That is a mile. Like a huge Grand Canyon between good and bad from the three-point line. And I know Hunter's, a year older? Mm-hmm. But that kind of drives me nuts. It's like, I think guys are penalized because they're a little bit older. Hunter missed, when Virginia lost in the first round to the 16th seed, Hunter didn't play. He was hurt. And, you saw the difference this year when he actually played. And his performance in the NCAA championship game was just insane. I think he's a perfect 3-and-D guy who is kind of like the modern day. He's just the epitome of the modern day NBA player. A guy who's 6'7", guards multiple positions, can hit the three, excellent shooting stroke. I really like him. And I hope that he's available at 7. And he's a guy, like, if the Bulls, worst came worst, they ended up at 7. I think hopefully right. He'll be available. He might have played his way into, 4th, 5, or 6. I'm not a fan of Coby White. I like Jared Culver, but I don't know. He's 195 pounds. He's 30 pounds lighter than DeAndre Hunter. Between those two guys, I'm shocked at how many people think Culver is a better option. I don't see it.
Yeah, Culver, he's been getting so much love on Bulls Twitter, especially. I think I've seen throughout the whole tournament. And I think, though, once the Final Four happened, the national title game, I feel like some of that's soured a little bit.
Well, I think it's primarily due to Ricky O'Donnell, who I love. He's a great kid, and he's, a very good writer, and he covers college. And, he has Culver at, the number 2 overall, which I think is insane. I don't think he's anywhere near better than R.J. Barrett or Morant. But I understand, why he liked him. But that said, Culver was terrible for the vast majority of NCAA tournament, especially in the games that mattered. I know he hit a big shot against Michigan State. He was an abomination for the vast majority of that game. Now, I like Culver, and if the Bulls end up with Culver, I'm not going to go into a depression and start crying. he'd be a nice addition that could fit interchangeably between the 2, 3, and probably even eventually grow into giving you minutes at the 4. So he's a fine player, and he'd be a great addition to the Big Red Leviathan, but out of those two players, I prefer Hunter to Culver.
After the draft, how are you attacking free agency? Are you being a little more cautious, a little more conservative, or would you try being aggressive if, let's say you get a Zion Williamson, let's say you win the lottery. Are you probably going into it a little more aggressively than you would if you picked somebody in that 4-7 range?
No, just simply because I don't think they can go more aggressive because there's no more roster spots available.
What if you do part with some assets, though?
Well, yeah, if you're going to make a trade, well, then you're probably going to be able to get a better player in return, I imagine, than signing a free agent. I don't think there's anybody realistically that, we're going to get in the free agency who's going to step in. Patrick Beverley's, to me, by far, the one guy that would fit perfectly. But, out of the guys that we're realistically going to get, who's going to be better than Otto Porter? Who's going to be better than Laurie at the 4? Who's going to be better than Wendell Carter at the 5? Who's going to be better than Zach LaVine at the 2? The lineup is set. Who are we bringing in? Who are you thinking?
I mean, this is me. I'm very much a pie in the sky hypothetical kind of person. So I'll throw one out at you. Let's say this scenario were to happen. Zion Williamson gets drafted, number one. Bulls get the number one pick, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of buzz surrounding the Bulls that some of the free agents take notice. And I'm going to throw one out at you. Let's say a Kyrie Irving takes notice at you. That's a point guard. I think if you saw the way the roster is made up now, if you could part with an Otto Porter just to dump salary, maybe you do take on another bad contract. Maybe you have to part with another piece. Would you consider, though, having that kind of core with Kyrie, Lowry, LaVine, and Zion?
I'd love to. I think that's a great idea. But the problem is there's no way in the world that Kyrie's coming here. Unless we had another free agent spot. I mean, it's clear he wants to pair up with Durant. Durant's the one guy. I mean, God, I'd love to somehow bring him in. But, you know, none of these guys, we don't have enough room for a max deal. Like, we have only $19 million, I believe, in cap space. None of those guys are coming in for a dime less than a max contract. We don't have a max contract. So, I mean, you look at the big free agents, Kawhi Leonard obviously wants to go to L.A. He'll probably end up one of two L.A. teams. Klay Thompson is probably going to re-sign with Golden State. Kemba Walker, I'm not sure I want to sign Kemba Walker on a max deal. I don't think he's worth a max deal. I think Kemba Walker is the kind of player, just like Jimmy Butler, who's a second tier. You know, he's not in the top 10, probably somewhere between 11 and 20, and he's not good enough to get you a title. And, you know, Kemba's going to shoot first type of guy, right? He's not going to you know, we already have Zach LaVine, and I think Zach LaVine is, you know, maybe a, not as, as good of a scorer, but he's in the ballpark. You know, he's, Kemba Walker is an excellent player, and he's the one guy, I guess maybe you could see just kind of fitting in, but he's not a typical point guard. You know what I mean? Just shoot first. It's more like a shooting guard in a point guard's body. Tobias Harris, I mean, he's going to stay in Philly. Chris Middleton, another example of a guy. You pay him a max deal. You really think he's worth that much? I don't.
No way.
You know, so I think the Bulls are better off kind of signing like a Patrick Beverley or like somebody second tier type of free agents that are good role players and just run with what we have.
What about at that point guard spot? What about I'll throw a couple of names out at you. Ricky Rubio.
He'd be a good I'd like Beverley better, but he'd be a nice option. Yes. Like a option number two. And again, I don't feel like you sign him and say, we're giving you the starting position. I want a guy like him to come in to challenge Dunn. Open competition in the preseason. And if Dunn wins the spot, he wins the spot. You bring Ruby off the bench.
I'll give you another name, Darren Collison.
Not as huge a fan of that. And I know there's people I respect. You know, Kevin Anderson comes to mind who are really high on Collison. I'm not. I've never thought he's – I think Dunn's a better player than Collison. I'll say it. He's definitely better. There's few players – Dunn got – best defensive votes in that player poll. I think Dunn's got more talent and bigger, stronger, better defensively.
Last name, Derrick Rose.
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, I love Derrick, and I would be happy if he came back. I wonder, I realize there's a significant portion of Bulls fans that, for whatever reason, don't like him. And it's sad to me because you know, he's obviously made mistakes that we all have in our life. I don't think Derek's a bad guy. I don't know him, but, you know, from what I've heard from people who've met him, you know, he's obviously not a perfect human being. But overall, I would have no problem with Derrick Rose coming back to the Bulls. He'd be great off the bench. But, you know, I think it'd be almost better to have a kind of situation where you had Beverly and Rose come back as like your lead player off the bench. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure. It depends also on like how much is that going to be? You know, you can't pay too much for him. You know, in my opinion, just because I think he's best suited as a backup point guard.
You know, as we wrap up here, of those players in your core that we brought up, is there one or two that you would consider moving if, let's say, there were a big fish player that was available on the trade market that grows disgruntled?
What player would I move on the Bulls?
Yeah, which of those players in the core would you ever consider moving to get like a big
superstar,
like an Anthony Davis, or you know, if it's like a Damian Lillard down the road, somebody like that?
I'd move anybody to get Davis outside of Markkanen. Markkanen's probably the only guy I would not move.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even move Wendell. I hate to say it. I think Laurie's got top 10 potential. I think Wendell's probably got top 30. I think Levine's got top 20. But, I mean, if you could make a trade, let's say you went next summer and you threw Levine and Wendell Carter Jr. for Anthony Davis, I think long and hard about it, but I'd make that deal. It's an interesting call. That's a tough one, man. Holy smokes, I'm thinking about it. I'm wondering, would I do it? I really like this Bulls team. I'd love to see it going forward, but how can you turn on an Anthony Davis at the center position next to Larry Markkanen?
And, like, you know, you do think, like, that player does carry cachet that if down the road cap space starts to free up a little bit or you can start making other moves, you might be able to attract other pieces with an Anthony Davis. And I think with a Larry Markkanen as he keeps progressing, I'm very high on Lauri Markkanen as well. Fred, I wanted to, thank you for coming on today. And
no problem, brother.
One last question. What's the ideal year that you think the Bulls need to start contending for the playoffs? And then what year do you think they need to start contending for a championship?
Well, I thought they should have been contending for the playoffs this year. But, you know, what's lost in this past season is the sheer amount of injuries. It's absolutely insane. Who are our three best players? In my opinion, it's Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine. They played a total of 16 games together. 16. How can you build any seamless cohesion playing 16 games together? It's insanity how many injuries we had. You know, starting out with Dunn, Markkanen, LaVine was out for large portions of the year. Wendell Carter Jr. out for large portions of the year. It's just insane. You know, how many injuries we had. Even Portis was a part of the core. At the early part of the year was out. Just, it was a joke. So no team, I don't care if it's Golden State Warriors, is going to maybe Golden State would still, you know, make the top five of the playoffs. But most teams would suffer and likely miss the playoffs with the sheer amount of injuries. So number one, if you stay healthy, I firmly believe the Bulls have too much talent not to make the playoffs next year. I've had the mantra 7 pick in 2017, 7 pick in 2018, 7 seed next year, and 7 title in 2021. I really believe the Bulls can do that. In fact, I think they could finish higher than 7 seed.
Hey, Fred, thanks for joining me. And I think next time we do this, let's do it over some beers at Bannerman's, okay?
That sounds great, brother. I'm down, man. Let's do it, man. Awesome talking to you, my man.
Thank you, Fred.
How's it going, brother?
Thanks for listening to the Rebuild the Bowl podcast. For the latest updates, visit us on Twitter at @rebuild_a_bowl. You can find our podcasts on Spotify, iTunes, and on rebuildthebowl.com.